KPFT Oral History Video Project.org, KPFT Houston.
That gentle beat is Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch, and that's our way of saying it's Thursday, 10 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story? We're the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, and we're right here on listener-sponsored 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston. I'm Warren Holloman. Tonight I'll be your host. Joining me to work the boards tonight, as always, is Nicole Rocher-Lynn. Hi, Nicole. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. You looking forward to tonight's show?
I'm very excited for tonight's show.
And I also want to say hello to Lisa, Lisa Moore. Hello. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Lisa is our new intern, and we're delighted to have you on the show as well. Nicole, Lisa, and I are privileged to be a part of what we think is the coolest team on the radio. Hank Rubicek, Greg Aldell, and Mary Edgerton's. We take turns hosting the show. Alondra Mejia is our guru of syndication. And, of course, Nicole Rocher-Lynn handles the engineering and also the social media. The reason we all do the show is that we believe that every day of every life is a story worth telling, and that every good story has the power to bring meaning to our lives and to bind us together as families, as friends, and as a community. Tonight's storytelling guest began her adult life by telling other people's stories. In other words, she was an actor and a theater professional. And that's basically what theaters do, right? They tell stories. And then she transitioned to a second career, in which her job description essentially was to listen to other people's stories. And what I'm really saying is that she became a family therapist. Well, tonight our guest is going to perform her third act, because tonight she's going to tell a couple of stories of her own. Sherry Dusson, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Thank you, Warren. It's great to be here.
We're delighted to have you here. I know later on you're going to tell a tale about how you transitioned from being a theater professional to a mental health professional. I don't want to steal your thunder there. But let me just ask you now, what exactly is a family therapist?
Well, a family therapist is someone who works with people within the context of the communities, the families in which they live, the systems in which they live. Mm-hmm. So even though we're working with mental health, we're not just looking at the individual. We're looking at the context in which that mental health issue may be occurring.
Well, I know you have a specialty in depression, and particularly postpartum depression.
Yeah.
And without going into great detail, if I had that problem, which would be interesting, would I go to a psychiatrist? Would I go to a psychologist? Or would I go to a family therapist?
Well, I think you would go to a family therapist. for one reason, that mothers and families that have postpartum depression often have no history at all. Yeah. And so they're not sure where to start. They might as well start with somebody who really knows about these illnesses. And that would be me.
Very, very good. Well, I know relationships are important, and they certainly have a big interaction with our mental health.
Absolutely.
Well, so, Sherry, what's your story?
Well, I wanted to tell you a story tonight about a friend that I knew in high school. When I was in high school, sometimes adults would say, "Enjoy these years. They're going to be some of the best years of your life." And I would roll my eyes and think, geez, I hope not. I mean, I was very hard-pressed to imagine that anything that might be happening to us during those boring and restless years stuck in a dusty desert southwestern town would have any impact on the life I was going to lead. I had a group of friends in high school that I had met at my church youth group. You know, the kind of youth group where they tell you to be nice and make sure everyone's included and don't have any cliques. There was a group of five of us that started hanging around together, and we immediately started calling ourselves the clique. It was three girls and two guys, and I want to tell you about one of the boys. His name was Tom. Tom was funny. He was smart. He was irreverent. He was a prankster. He was an instigator of many of the jokes and the harmless pranks that we amused ourselves with. He was always creating laughs. Like he came up with nicknames for all of us. Like there was the smallest, tiniest girl in the group. He called her the blimp. My nickname was Oh Great Goddess. Now, I know that sounds very glamorous, but it was just as ironic as the blimp, because I was an extremely awkward, fuzzy-haired, crooked-toothed girl, but I was a little bossy, and I think I got that nickname because I kind of acted as if I was all-knowing sometimes. But we got through lots of good times together, and at the end of my junior year, Tom told me that he was transferring to another state, his family was moving. And I remember that conversation because we sat there and he looked a little scared and a little down about having to leave. And he was a little guy, but he had these huge feet inside these great big New Balance tennis shoes. And I remember looking at those feet and I said, you know what, Tom, you're going to grow and you're going to be so good looking. When you get to California, you're going to babe out. You're going to look just like Tom Cruise. So he went on, and, you know, we kept up only through friends. But in 2001, I got an email with the subject line, Oh Great Goddess. And I knew exactly who that was from. It turns out that he was trying to organize some of the old friends to get together for a 20th high school year reunion. All of us were married that by this point. I had two little kids and a spouse, and he was married and had a child. But he really was working on getting all of us together. He caught me up on his life. He had turned out to be a very successful scientist. He told me hilarious stories. All of this was in email, but I've kept all of them so I can read these things. Hilarious stories about pranks in the lab and things that he did. He was also a pilot. He was really quite accomplished. But he also told me that he had lost his father a few weeks ago to Huntington's disease. Now, I wanted to just mention a little bit about Huntington's disease in case anybody doesn't know. It's a degenerative neurological disorder. Basically, brain cells are dying away slowly, and a person loses their functioning physically and mentally, and it is fatal. If someone has a parent who has Huntington's disease, they have a 50% chance of having it as well. And Tom told me that he had been symptomatic for about 2 years when we got back in touch. Nevertheless, he got us all together. We were all together in at the reunion, had a great time. And by that point, he was on disability, but he was still doing fine. He was doing lots of experimental treatments and very positive and optimistic and also very transparent about his illness. And he even made jokes about, you know, the tics and the tremors he would have. It was really just amazing. After we got together, that summer, I got a very interesting email from him. He was still upbeat and talking about how he was going to really be looking for a cure for this illness, but he was also doing some estate planning. And he said that after some conversations with his spouse, he had decided that he wanted to name some of his friends from high school in his will, and that I was one of those people that he was going to name in his will, and that when the time comes, I should probably expect about $10,000. Well, I was shocked and surprised, and I just sit awkward, just said, well, I hope that's not anything we need to talk about anytime soon.
You're listening to So What's Your Story on 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and online at www.kpft.org. I'm Warren Holloman. My guest is Sherry Dusson, And now back to Sherry for the rest of the story.
So we continued to keep in touch. That summer was also the summer of Tropical Storm Allison, and our house actually flooded during that event. And Tom was so concerned about me. I mean, here he was really battling his own struggles, and he would call and he would email and he'd say, "Do I need to get a truck and drive some, bring some furniture out for you?" And he was really just amazing. But as the years went on, he did get more and more impaired, and there were fewer emails, but he did continue to call. And in 2007, he sent what would be his last email to me, and it was entitled "Living with Huntington's Disease," and he just kind of laid out what it was like. 2 weeks later, I got the news that he had passed away. A few days later, I got a phone call from his mother, and she said, "As you know, you were named in his will, and I just wanted you to know that you should be expecting a check sometime soon." And we talked about Tom, and we talked about what an extraordinary person he was, and, again, it was a little uncomfortable to hear that news, but I remembered, oh, yeah, the $10,000, After we hung up, I was thinking about the fact that the timing was kind of interesting. You see, this was after the economic downturn had begun, and actually my spouse had been laid off from the big software company that he worked for. And right after Tom passed away, the severance package from that big software company was coming to a close. A few weeks later, I got a note from his mother, and I did get a check for $175,000.
Lord, wow.
I felt shock. I felt guilt. I felt amazement, confusion, gratitude. A few weeks later, I was talking with my mentor, and I was really struggling. I said, I don't know. I don't think I can accept this money. And she said, "Sherry, he was a young man. He was 42 years old. He wanted to leave a legacy, a lasting impression on the people that mattered to him the most. He wanted to leave his mark. He was leaving too soon." And then she said, "I don't think that you accepting it is really your decision to make. He made that decision for his own reasons." So it's been 10 years since that happened, and I'm finally telling this story. Why? Because I feel like it's time to honor him and to tell people about this extraordinary and unique person and the lessons that we learned from him. Lessons like, look for the humor in everything and remember your friends and don't be afraid to share your life, the details, the ups and downs. That's the true essence of connection with other people. And connection is the greatest predictor of happiness. And never underestimate the power of your impact on another person, even someone you just knew in high school.
I'm supposed to comment now, but I'm having trouble. That's a very tender story. It's such a remarkable story.
Yeah, thank you.
What was it like for you to share that story?
It means a lot to share it. I feel a great responsibility to tell it truthfully from my point of view.
Right.
I certainly didn't tell the whole story of him or his life. There was so much more to it.
Yeah.
But his impact on me, I felt like was a story worth telling. Because he had a huge impact on me and my family at a really critical time.
Right. Wow.
In a huge way.
Yeah. Talk about generosity. I mean, that's the theme that jumps out at me.
Yeah, I wish I had something really insightful to say about it, except, being on the receiving end of it is extremely humbling.
Yeah.
I think it makes me want to be more generous myself.
Yeah.
I think that's almost always how I respond to generosity is like, oh, who can I help, you know?
Yeah.
Just kind of that passing it along.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this story, I know you, and I know that you're a very generous, giving person, altruistic person. But this isn't a story about you. It's about him, and it's about you being on the receiving end of that, which
right.
is sort of a role reversal.
Well, right, right. And really felt so undeserving.
Yeah.
I mean, we were friends, but we weren't super close. I mean, I guess that's all, you know, relative, right?
Yeah.
Based on...
Well, you were the great goddess.
Well,
come on.
I know. I mean, I should not be surprised. But, I mean, I was 15 when he left. So,
right.
I mean, it was... Or 16, maybe. But, yeah. I mean, I think it was something about his unique life and his experience that brought him back to us at that point in his life.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really not up to us to ask why.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about what you said at the very end of the story is we never know the impact or the importance of those relationships we had when we were younger.
Yeah.
You were trying, I think you both were probably trying to move away from that desert town that
right.
you grew up in.
Yeah.
And, but obviously he took with him some very strong feelings for his childhood friends.
Yeah. And us for him as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, go ahead.
I just want to add one more thing. As a memorial to him, we all met back at a garden at the church. And planted a tree there in his honor. And it was just really remarkable to be all back together at that same place where it all began.
Right. Wow. I mean, so through his suffering, through his death, and through his generosity, that brought these friends back together.
Absolutely.
While he was alive and then after.
That's right. That's right. Mm. It was quite a gift.
Yeah. Wow. I know that we'll talk later about your career in theater, and I just have to comment that it sounds like it's one of those truths that's stranger than fiction. It's
true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What would you like our listeners to take from your story?
Whatever touches them about it. Again, I offer it out there just openly. Whatever connects is what's supposed to connect.
Yeah. Have you, if I may ask, have you shared this story very often with your family or anybody else?
You know, not a lot, obviously, my husband. And I told it to my daughter tonight, and she was so little when it happened that she never really had the details, and she was amazed, you know. I wasn't the only recipient, and so there are other people that I have talked with quite a bit about it, but I've never talked about it in public.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you did. I'm glad
Thank
you did.
Thank you.
Well, I know you've got another story for us coming up a little later about this transition from a theater professional to a mental health professional. We'll find out if they're really that different. But first, I want to check back in with Nicole Rocherlin. I think she's got a couple of updates for us.
Thank you, Warren. Well, you do know our sponsor is the Houston Storytellers Guild, who happens to meet every fourth Tuesday night of the month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. And they are located at 1500 Sunset Boulevard, and that's at Temple Emmanuel, right across the street from Rice University. So make sure you also check out their site as well at www.houstonstorytellers.org. Go on to radio shows and you can see and find all of our previous shows there.
And speaking of sponsors, we also have a few hundred other sponsors because KPFT is a listener-sponsored radio station. So I just want to say a big thank you to all who contributed in the January fund drive.
Yes, a big thank you is due. So thank you again to all of our listeners and our good friends. And next week, be sure to stay tuned because Hank is hosting. His guest is Beth Wachira. She'll be telling a story about HIV and poverty, one that will help us all appreciate the gift of just being alive. And if you want to keep up with the latest buzz about our show, check out our Facebook page. You can watch videos of the show, find out about the upcoming guest. You also can friend us, like us, post photos, and tell us exactly what you're thinking. Always great stuff on So What's Your Story? Only on KPFT Houston Pacifica 90.1 FM.
And just a reminder, the next Houston Moth Story Slam is coming up very soon. It's coming up Tuesday, in fact. As always, it will be at Warehouse Live at 7:30. The theme is Love Hurts. That's the theme every February with the Moth Valentine's theme. It's one of my favorite months to go. The stories are always good, really good. Well, now I'd like to shift back to talk again with our guest, Sherry. I was fascinated to learn that your first career was not in mental health, but in theater.
That's right.
And then later you made that transition. So that also sounds like an interesting story.
Well, I don't know how interesting it is, but there are a lot of connections.
Yeah.
So I thought I would just tell you about a few connections that are obvious to me, but was actually part of my graduate school interview.
Okay.
A lot of people think theater is about performing and sitting up on stage and putting on a show, but really most of the work is done at the table, looking at the script, looking at the characters, figuring out who are these people. Why do they say the things they say? Why do they do the things they do? What's their backstory? How are they connected? And really, that's pretty much the essence of therapy as well. It's just kind of what you do with it. So the first is that it's the same process of looking at people and understanding humanity and relationships. So there was a very close connection there. Secondly, is that both professions take creativity. You know, you can train all you want to be an actor or to be a therapist, but when it comes down to it, you're doing things on the fly. You're listening, you're responding, and you're having that one unique moment with that person. So it's really not something you can plan too much for. You have to trust your creativity. You have to know that those instincts are there and you have to use them. And third, I would say in both instances, you got to keep it real. There's nothing less inspiring than an actor who's not really connecting with their material and they really believe it, you know? And I would say the same goes for a therapist. You know, you can try to fake that you care, but you're not going to get very far. So authenticity, not pretending, those are qualities and that are necessary for both professions. So in many ways, the transition was not that hard.
So you're a natural.
I think I'm more naturally a therapist than I was a theater person, actually. Otherwise, I think I would have stayed there, right?
Well, if you'd done it the other way around, maybe. Well, maybe the theater, though, prepared you.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Theater is where I grew up and learned everything I learned about human beings and people and stories and
I mean, that's incredible, the creative process you described. So I guess before you even rehearse, you sit around a table and sort of analyze the characters and try to get inside their heads.
That's what you do most of the time. And even memorizing lines, you know, you're not just learning words, you're thinking, why is this character saying this?
Right.
And why in this way? What's happened in their lives that's brought them to this point right now?
And that's exactly what a therapist does, is sit there and try to figure out what's really going on.
Right.
What's their motivation? What's their...
What gets in the way? What's their what's their objective? What's their obstacle? How are they going to get there?
And it's interesting, you mentioned keeping it real, authenticity. I went to a play festival last year, and I just happened to sit beside somebody who was a really good theater director that I thought very highly of. And she was very involved in the productions. And And I was being polite during intermission. I said, oh, that was very wonderful. They did such a good job. Congratulations. And she was all upset. She said, I did not believe that character. I did not believe her. And she was just, she was having a fit about it.
Yeah.
And it's acting, but.
Yeah, it's not about pretending.
Yeah.
I mean, your best moments, your best experiences at the theater is when it's touches you because it's real.
Yeah.
Because the actor is connected to something that is authentic.
Right. Wow. Thanks. So I've been interviewing you as though I don't know anything about therapy.
That's right.
And actually, I know a little bit because you taught me some of it.
Well, I don't know about that, but you and I were in family therapy school together 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember our first meeting, you found out I was coming from the theater and you handed me a script that you had just written.
I exploited
Well, not at all. I just, and I remember hearing your presentations and being pretty blown away. And so I'm just really happy that, this connection has continued throughout the years. I mean, my husband ended up working with you and now you're helping him with his nonprofit and, it's a very small world.
Houston is a small town. I mean, our lives have overlapped.
Yep.
And the first overlap, I don't even remember. I remember I had written this play that I thought was the best thing ever done and showed it. But
it
you
was.
Said I showed it to you 5 or 10 years before that? Or
well, yeah. Maybe the first draft.
Yeah.
And then when you were presenting it at our state conference, you asked me to take a look at it again. And you remember that meeting because that was in the Village.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
But that
where,
was about 10 years after. Yeah.
Well, I have to say, you were very encouraging. And I don't think it was that great a work of art, at least at that point. But your encouragement gave me a lot of energy to keep at it.
I thought it was pretty darn good. And I could tell it meant an awful lot to you. You were really, you had something to say in that play for sure.
Yeah, I think, it's interesting. You talk about the overlap. That story is about a Russian and a Ukrainian families, but it's really about me.
Yeah.
And so the theater, the psychology,
right.
It always...
It's all the same thing.
Yeah. Well, guess what, Sherry? We're out of time.
Believe it.
You've shared stories about friendship and generosity and grace. You've reminded us that whether we're telling the stories of others the way an actor does, or whether we're listening to the stories of those who may be hurting the way a therapist does, or whether we're telling our own stories, you've reminded us that life is about being connected to our friends, to our families, to our community, and that one of the best ways to connect is through the magic and the power of stories. So thanks, Sherry. It's been a delight having you on the show.
Thank you, Warren. My pleasure.
Scooter is next with The Inner Side. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, tuning in, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And ease into the weekend right. You keep loving a great story, and we'll keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. Until next week, Bill, Nicole Rocherlin, Alondra, Lisa, Mary, Greg, Hank, Sherry, and I remind you that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
We remember 2016 as a monumental year. We look toward 2017 with big questions and many unknowns. You rely on KPFT for open conversations, engaged culture, and insightful analysis. These values matter now more than ever. With KPFT's Winter Fund Drive concluded, we wish to thank you for your contribution. Your financial support sustains KPFT's financial health and independence. If you didn't get a chance to help during the campaign, you can make a tax-deductible contribution now at kpft.org. As you give to organizations that have real impact in your life and your community, now is the time to support real radio when you need it most. Radio when you need it most.